Questions, comments, discussion?
Hello, everybody. This is Again With This, Melrose Plays, episode...
That's not how you do it.
Oh, my God.
This was happening in my brain when... I mean, I would have fucked that up anyway, but right. This was happening in my brain. Okay. Here we go. Hang on. Oh.
Questions, comments, discussion?
Dave, remember when you were at roller derby practice and there was that one instructor who would always say questions, comments, quaments, and you hated her so much? Oh, wait a sec. You're recording a TV show podcast. Get back to it. That was what happened there.
Okay.
Okay, here we go.
Questions, comments, discussion?
Hello, everybody. This is Again With This, Melrose Place. Today's episode is Season 5, Episode 29, Ultimatums and the Single Guy. And now, here are your hosts,
Tara Aranio and Sarah D. Bunting.
That's the energy for taping 1 of 5 today that Dave is bringing. Mm-hmm. Thank you, Dave.
Yeah.
Thank you, listeners, for
David
being...
David T. Cool.
Thank you, listeners, for being with us in the dog days of this fucking season. Oh, my God, the end is actually in sight. Mm. Sort of. There's still surprisingly numerous episodes to go after this episode 29. But before we get into that, we want to tell you what's going on at our Patreon. Again with this episode 116 dropping October 21st is Let's Watch Jack Wagner's Hot in Cleveland debut. He premiered on the show in season 2, episode 4, Sisterhood of the Traveling Spanx, which you can find on Paramount Plus. We will link it in the show notes. He was in more than one episode. Perhaps we will cover all of them. Who's to say?
See where the Spanx?
I wish. Hmm. I mean, I guess we don't know that he didn't.
He's Wagnering his Jack and a pair of Spanx. Yes.
Jack Spanxner.
Bum, 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 bum. Crushed penis.
I never made the connection of Jack Wagner before, but Dave took us there again.
Spanx of the Valkyries. God, guys, we have so much recording to
we do.
We do.
Anyway, we also want to let you know there may be more Jack Wagner content coming to the Patreon soon. So there
please just call him Jack Wagner.
At least for the rest of today. Anyway, let's get into this episode, starting with our C plot. Very C. Megan and Matt are concerned about wayward girls, Jennifer and Chelsea, respectively. The morning after Mark's arrival, this is Matt's gay friend who has been extremely off screen until now. Chelsea listens to Matt cheerfully serving Mark coffee and apologizing for the lumpy foldout. Mark thanks Matt for the good night's sleep. He just needed to be held. When Chelsea comes out, Mark says he's going to leave. He needs to face his own apartment eventually, and Chelsea side-eyes them as he and Matt exchange another chaste hug, which, like, they're friends. There's nothing sexual going on between the two of them. Mark's boyfriend. It just died.
Yeah, but you can be forgiven for Chelsea being confused because
right.
Everything is communicated via chaste hug in yep. Matt's relationship world. So as far as she's concerned, they're practically doing it.
That's right. So when Mark has gone, Chelsea starts prying. Clip 2.
So is he like a boyfriend of yours?
Mark? No. No. He's actually the lover of a friend of mine who just died.
Did this friend die of AIDS?
Yeah, he did.
You ever worry about getting it?
Sure. But I've been tested. I've been tested several times and I'm safe. I'm always safe. Anyway, at this point, I'm probably as worried about never finding the right guy, so...
Think you ever will?
God, I hope so. But I haven't had much luck so far. Did you hear that?
What?
That was us actually having a conversation. First one in 3 days. Hey, I think you're going to like staying here after all.
Especially when you get the goss about how one of his lovers tried to set him up for the murder of his wife.
I mean, he should be working that angle more. That's a great point, Sarah, of like why Chelsea should want to stay with him. The drama.
Seriously. Oh my God. So much better car talk in that car.
I mean, even for Matt, like once he runs out of his own decent worth retelling stories, he can just tell her about all of his neighbors. That's much more interesting than anything Denise has on offer. I guarantee.
Oh my God. So true. How many people have drowned in the pool?
Seriously. How many people exploded? Anyway, over to the beach house where Megan gets back from a run to say no one at any house on the beach has seen Jennifer. She doesn't call by tonight. Megan wants to report her missing, which leads to an argument about how seriously to take Jennifer's having run away. And for someone who is so concerned about Megan having returned to sex work just a few episodes ago, Michael is really pretty cavalier saying that Jennifer knows how to make a quick buck, in my opinion.
Yeah. Although I did sort of enjoy the she's a Mancini, we're like cats comparison. True. It was like, you lick your buttholes? Yep.
He's more of a dog, but yes, I get it. Cut to a strip club where Jennifer has come to apply for a server job. Learns that the uniform is a teddy, but Jennifer's fine with that. She's willing to wear even less, in fact, so she gets hired on the spot. And when we check back in on this establishment, she's in uniform mid-shift when she sneaks into a back room and calls Megan, clip 3.
I just called to let you know I'm not lying dead in a ditch.
It's always a ditch.
It's always a ditch.
Why is it always a ditch? That was written by a mom. Also, I'd like to note that the club manager is played by Joey from Saturday Night Fever.
I did not clock him. Well done. Mm. You can see him in the visual aids. Jennifer says she found a job at a neighborhood bar in the valley and a place to live, but she can't give Megan any phone number where she can be reached. Very normal in the mid-late 90s.
Yeah.
And then this manager catches Jennifer on the phone and orders her back out. And she's like, just a sec, close the door. And he's like, you got a lot of nerve, but then also does it. Like, okay. Way to project authority.
She's growing on me.
Indeed. So then Jennifer arranges to meet Megan for lunch the next day. Over to Shooters, where Matt has brought Chelsea to see Denise, expositing that since the judge has awarded them joint custody, he thought they would be more comfortable discussing the schedule there. He was wrong. Denise is a bitch about it. Clip 4.
Not to mention the fact that Chelsea loves the burgers.
Yeah, last time I stayed with Matt, we had dinner here a lot. Well, I'm not a red meat eater. And I'm surprised, as a med student, that you would encourage Chelsea to be one.
Right.
I mean, props to Nancy Lee Grahn for the med student, like just putting a little extra bitch mustard on that line.
Mm-hmm.
Like, okay, bitch.
Whatever. I mean, I love that this is the episode in which Shooters is all of a sudden like the it burger joint.
Yeah.
Out and out of the Melrose neighborhood.
Just
like it's never relevant. And all of a sudden, I mean, we'll get back into this later, but it just made me laugh both times that I was like, oh, now that's what it's known for, and not having regular brawls.
Yeah.
In which are everything's fixed, like in the next scene.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting.
Yeah. Anyway, back to this exchange. Since Denise doesn't work, Matt suggests that he take Chelsea on the weekends, but Chelsea doesn't see why she should have to be shunted between two homes, particularly since she would rather stay with Denise, who shoots Matt a smug, bitchy look about it. Chelsea ends with, but whatever, and Matt decides to ignore everything else. Denise, however, is ready to leave with Chelsea immediately. Matt thought that they'd all have dinner, but she snits that it's not the weekend and she doesn't plan to share Chelsea with Matt any more than she already has to. And when she pulls Chelsea away to eat somewhere decent, Chelsea looks remorseful as she says she's sort of a vegetarian now anyway. Oh, Chelsea. He had us, then he lost us.
Yeah.
Not that there's anything wrong with being a vegetarian, of course, but, you know, if you eat meat, it's fine. Anyway, speaking of Shooters.
Good save, Tara.
Well, I'm just saying, for her character, as opposed to in the world at large. Dave, you disgust me. Speaking of Shooters, that's where Megan meets Jennifer for lunch the next day. Jennifer's putting the best possible face on her new place of employment, but Megan has figured out it's a strip club. I misread my
notes.
Hello,
this is God.
Free Jones. I misread my notes. It says place of employment, and I read it as place AF employment, as in place as fuck employment. Which makes no sense.
I mean, kind of.
True. Never mind. Megan has figured out it's a strip club where Jennifer's working now. And Jennifer admits that's true, but promises she's the server so Michael doesn't have to lose his mind about it. To which Megan then very deliberately tells Jennifer about having formerly been a sex worker herself, and that a lot of the girls that she knew when she was working on the street started as strippers. Jennifer is shocked by this information, but Megan has further figured out this is not Jennifer's first job in a strip club, and Jennifer confirms that is also true. Her whole life, she's been treated as a walking mistake and eventually started thinking everyone had a point. She believed Kyle's sweet talk, but then he went back to his wife and took her job and her friends with him. But he did Jennifer a favor. The guys she sees may not be the classiest. You know, they have tattoos. But at least she doesn't get lied to anymore. Okay. Some number of days later, Denise is walking Chelsea out for the handoff to Matt, returning this snitch diary that Chelsea forgot upstairs. And in the car, Matt says he knows this must be unsettling for Chelsea. It's not that he doesn't like Denise. He just doesn't think Denise can provide the best lifestyle for Chelsea, which is weird choice of word under the circumstances, given the main issue at hand here, I guess. But
I mean, and also life, period. Like, right. She doesn't work now. The fuck is she good for? Like, sorry, but
right.
She hasn't been around. Did she just move back here with no job?
Well, I assumed he meant she's not working while she's in L.A. Like, she's taken a leave of absence from whatever she does in Paris. But you're right. They have not established that she has a job in Paris either.
No.
He remembers Denise during her marriage to Luke, Chelsea's late father, and says she could be a free spirit, which I took to mean she smoked pot sometimes.
Yeah.
And
same.
Chelsea rolls her eyes, and Matt says he won't badmouth Denise because it's not fair to put Chelsea in the middle. And Chelsea agrees, and Denise tensely watches them drive off. And that's where we leave them. No progress having been made in any direction at all.
Yeah. About characters that either we don't care about or that literally note for note duplicate characters that already exist, but whose actors asked for more money, I assume.
Yeah. Onto our B plot. Jake and Allison pursue adoption while Billy learns the truth about Jim.
Sorry, can I just interrupt for a sec?
Yeah.
I just had this auditory sort of fully formed thing where when you switch B plots, there is like a giant 20-second production leading up to like a whole orchestra and a choir, church choir singing B plot.
Okay.
And if that's not a good use of Patreon money, I don't know what is. So let's think about it. Give it a noodle. You know.
Yeah.
B-plot.
I think we know someone who could make that for us if we paid him enough. Probably.
I think we could also just use the Nonak music for Extra Hot Crate and then have someone singing B-plot. Mm-hmm. Someone like me who can't really sing.
Well, we'll look into it.
Anyway, the B-plot. Not knowing that Billy totally busted her visiting her dad, not in Chicago, at the end of the last episode, Sam returns home and tries to act normal while Billy waits to see if she's going to disclose anything voluntarily and even baits her into lying about her long hours at the store. And when she does, he finally confronts her and her tall hair, which you can see in the visual aids. Sarah and I both independently cut the exact same frame, like her face position is the same. But the difference is I have two arrows on mine, one pointing up and the other pointing out, just because it's so big. It's so big.
Yeah. And then in some scenes in this episode, it's big. And then in the next shot, it is less big, but still too big. And there's always way too much eye for a grocery store checkout clerk.
Yeah.
In my opinion.
Yeah, you're not working for tips. Like, relax. Anyway.
I wasn't really paying full attention to the start of that sentence. And I was just imagining Peter Cushing from Top Secret, you know, when he takes the magnifying glass off and his eyes actually that big.
It's his giant eye.
That's a lot of eye for a grocery clerk.
Or the cactus plant flea market McDonald's characters I keep seeing in that disturbing ad that all have four eyes.
What is that?
It's a streetwear brand that got a collab with McDonald's for
some reason. Back
in
my day, streetwear was just comfortable clothes.
I hear you. I'm
back in my day, we just said the whole fucking word collaboration. I'm not a crackpot.
Okay.
That wasn't directed at you, but if you say cowards, I am driving to Texas and we're going to fight.
Old.
Anyway.
Plot.
B plot. Sam tries to turn this conversation around to being about Billy prying into her family, which doesn't work. And then she finally admits Jim's on the lam. And Billy immediately goes for the phone, but Sam begs him not to call the cops and repeats Jim's tale. I won't call it a lie because we don't know it is. It's certainly a tale, at the very least, about being at risk of gang murder if he goes back inside. And when she says she just needs to get Jim out of town, Billy snaps that they could both go to jail for aiding and abetting. And Sam feels bad about that, but she doesn't know what else to do with her guilt about testifying against Jim. And Billy yells that Jim put himself in jail. And Sam tearfully asks for a few days, and for some reason, Billy silently agrees and coldly endures her grateful kisses, which you can also see in the visual aids. Jesus, dude, just move out.
Yeah. I mean, right face, though.
True, right face. He's got a higher batting average lately, and we note it, and we celebrate it.
We do.
Over to the office at Shooters, and oh no, now it's time for us to find out how this show's dumb writers think adoption works. Clip 5.
I've been in there on the phone for 2 hours. Who are you talking to?
Everybody. I had to call 20 places before I found the right adoption agency.
Oh, right.
I thought he was going to say he had to call 20 places before he found the right kid.
I almost forgot we talked about adopting.
You still want to, don't you? I mean, I know we had a few drinks that day.
Oh, Jake, please. Of course I do.
Good. Because we have an appointment to be interviewed by a placement counselor tomorrow.
Really? Wow, that's quick.
Had to be. There's a waiting list, especially if you want more than one kid. This is going to be great. You know why?
No, why?
Because even if our kids aren't blood related, we'll have chosen them. So they'll know they were wanted, which is all that matters, right?
Yeah.
You're not buying a fucking side table, Holmes. What is this tone?
Yeah.
Our first child shall be called West Elm.
It's pronounced Ikea.
Oh, my God. I mean, I called 20 adoption agencies. It's nighttime. Like, what are you doing? And, like, that's not how it works.
But the real, like, connect the dots.
You found the right one?
Yeah, is that he went to the yellow pages.
Right.
Under adoptions.
Yep.
And there's, like, a whole bunch of ads that are really designed to entice you to call them first. Like, it's not like a social service. Yeah. It's like AAA adoption, you know.
Just
adoption.
Also, way to cover for getting you agreed to this while drunk, Allison. You really sold it. Not. When we meet back up with Billy and Sam, he is dragging her to her dad's motel room door. Jim, amazing fugitive, just casually yells, "Who is it?" Not a care in the world that the answer might be the FBI.
Landshark.
Sam says it's her, so Jim is surprised to see Billy there also shoving his way in. He says he brought Sam to say goodbye. Jim assumes Sam snitched, but Billy says he had to pry it out of her. Clip 6.
What kind of man are you? You put your daughter at risk? I don't care if your life was in danger. She could wind up in the same place that you had to escape from. Huh? You even think about that? Selfish son of a bitch.
Of course he did. He just didn't have a choice.
Yeah, bull.
You're right, son. And you got a lot of guts for saying so. Sam? Come here, Carmen. I didn't mean to bring you into this. I guess I wasn't thinking about how much trouble this might cause you. Let me finish. Now, I want you to go with this young man here. I want you to walk out that door and not look back. Because the last thing I want is for my daughter to end up like me.
Oh, does this mean, like, I'm never going to see you again?
You wish.
God, please. Yes.
Yeah, I guess it does. But maybe it's for the best, huh?
Yep.
Now you beat it out of here. Before I turn selfish on you again.
Do
Bye, Dad.
See you, girl. Oh, and Sam, I'm sorry for not being a better father all these years.
This is like being waterboarded with corn pone. Incestuous corn pone, by the way.
Yeah.
I mean, when it's not actively grossing me out, I'm asleep.
Yes.
What are they trying to do here? Seriously.
I mean, it only gets worse, but yeah, I guess I kind of spoiled. This is not the last we see of Jim, despite what he just finished saying.
No.
Then it's the next day. Jake and Allison are sitting down with the social worker from the agency that they arranged a meeting with on less than 12 hours notice, because that's how adoption works. Also, they are doing some lying. Clip 7.
So this is an adult apartment complex.
That's right.
I couldn't help but notice the pool, no protective fencing around it.
Well, we'll probably move into a house as soon as we can once we get the baby.
Mm-hmm. Now, it says here that you're bar owners?
Yeah, bar restaurant. We serve hamburgers and fries and stuff like that.
All right. Do either of you have a history of mental illness or chronic physical illness?
Nope.
No.
Any criminal records, substance abuse problems, and or related arrests?
I had a DUI once. It was a long time ago. It was a dumb mistake on my part. It won't happen again.
How long have you been married?
Just a few months, but we've known each other for years.
To be honest, your newlywed status would be one of my biggest concerns here. Too many times people adopt before they give their own relationships enough time to prepare for the enormity of child rearing.
Well, we may not have 10 years behind us, but we are both very committed to each other and to having a family. We recently lost a baby because of a miscarriage, and we can't have another one.
I'm sorry to hear that.
Look, having a family means everything to us. I hope you believe that.
I do, Mr. Hansen, I really do. So, I have a few other things I have to verify, but I feel confident we can work something out.
You're not refinancing the car loan.
Yeah.
Why are you... this is infuriating.
Okay. First of all, they've been married for like 3 episodes. It hasn't been a couple of months. And this is an easily verifiable fact. Your marriage is in the public record. Mm-hmm. Second, we'll probably move into a house. Hey, didn't you buy a house? Seems like it's been a while since we heard about that place. Like... Mm-hmm. Just everyone forgot. Also, what part of all of that convinced her we lost a baby seconds before our marriage earlier this month?
Yeah. And also, if you're a bar owner, who fucking cares that you're serving burgers and fries, stuff like that? Yeah. Like, oh, well, as long as there's fries. What? So dumb. So dumb. He's such a weirdo. And the desperation, it's not good.
Have you ever been to a place where they had a burger, but they didn't have fries? It was like burgers and like potato chips.
Oh, yes.
That's the worst.
Yes. Yeah, so it I'm is just the saying, worst. It is.
I appreciate if somebody just tells you right up front, there's no fries here.
Yeah.
I would avoid
I agree.
It.
Okay, but he's not raising his child in the kitchen.
In the French fry?
I hope. I mean... That sends him to the head of the list
right.
at my adoption agency, the starch forward adoption agency run by Sarah D. Bunting. Uh-huh. We're going to let a potato nanny our child. Great. Sign here.
I mean, to that point, when she refers to the enormity of responsibility of child rearing, that's not the word unless you think child rearing is very, very bad. Enormity doesn't just mean bigness. Look it up.
No.
That's the right word for me to use about child rearing, but probably not an adoption counselor. Anyway, for fuck's sake, moving on. Remember how we didn't believe that Jim was leaving town? We are smart, as we confirm when he stops Sam in the parking lot after work and drags her by what else? The arm. Growling about her boyfriend thinking he could dictate when and how Jim said goodbye to her. Sam feels bad, but it's dangerous for her to be seen with him. She's not going to let Billy know that Jim is still around. But she's done everything she can for Jim, and he needs to go. But when she tries to walk away, he grabs her by both shoulders and yells that she can't choose sex over family real creepy way to put it, my dude, given the subtext we've been commenting on.
Yeah, I feel like she wasn't making that choice when you were, before you went to the Hooskow, but barf.
Anyway, she wriggles out of his grip, repeating that she can't help him anymore. Over to the Jake and Allison's place. Jake apparently called in sick so they could get wasted together. His spin is that they are celebrating becoming parents. Clip 8.
I wonder if it'll actually happen.
Of course it will. She liked us. A lot.
The interview didn't worry you at all.
No. You look great. You're honest? And you're great. So where's your left go?
Go away!
Go get it.
Oh, hey. Hi.
I left my appointment book here.
Oh, yeah, I haven't seen it.
No, it's right here. I got it. Oh!
Hey, you all right?
Yeah, I slept. So, owning a bar has its effects after all.
No, we were just celebrating because the interview went so well. You're not gonna hold that against us, are you?
To be honest, I don't think I have a choice. Good night.
Better late than never, counselor lady.
Indeed. And you can see in the visual aids, Jake's reaction to this suggests he's so drunk he may not actually understand what just happened. Like, yeah. He's kind of smiling. It's not great. Wrong face. Mm-mm. The wrong face virus has infected Grant Cho.
Unless we're supposed to infer from that he is way too drunk, which, okay.
Right. That's what I mean. Yes.
Okay.
Okay.
So, yes. But it's like the right wrong face?
Yes, I guess you're right. Yes.
Versus like endemic wrong face.
True. The next day, that bald guy is back, now with a female detective, to find Billy at D&D and ask him about Jim. Billy smoothly lies that he has never met Jim, and the detective confirms our suspicions that Jim was in state prison in Maryland and snuck off from a work detail last month and got across the whole fucking country somehow. Billy less smoothly lies that Sam would be the last person Jim would try to see, and the bald guy seems to see through him. And the next day, Jake gets home from work early to find Allison still in her robe next to a bottle of vodka. Finally, he has had enough and pours it down the sink. Clip 9.
No more vodka, no more beer, no more anything.
Oh, Jake, come on. What's the matter?
No.
Come on, don't.
I said no.
Jake, why are you doing this? Come on, if it's about the interview, we can try again. Go to another place.
That's not going to happen, Allison. I went to talk to the lady at the adoption agency and ask her to give us another chance. She won't. She did a background check on us, and I guess it made us look even worse. I guess she thinks you're an alcoholic.
Because she is.
Oh, God. Oh, God, it's my fault, isn't it? For not staying sober. I should have stopped.
It's not just you. We were both drunk. We've both been in some kind of downward spiral since we lost the baby. I mean, look at us. Look at what we do with each other. Look at where we work. Look at where we live. It's like we're in some kind of a sinkhole.
And I'm the dead weight.
Don't blame yourself. It's everything. It's everything around us.
Jake, why do we lose our way?
Maybe we don't belong here. Maybe we need to just get out of this place.
Yeah, maybe we do.
Okay, obviously we all know why this is happening, but acting like this place is the reason they were in a codependent downward spiral is pretty rich, given they did all of their drinking alone.
Yeah. Also, I said no. She's not a puppy.
Yeah. Yes.
Why must you talk to her like that?
Oh, yeah, great, God. This guy's back.
He's so terrible this season.
Well, we don't have much more to endure. Moving on.
No, we don't.
Over to D&D. Now the authorities are talking to Amanda, who readily says the photo they're showing her is Sam's dad and that he totally stayed with Billy and Sam for a while. Directly to the bullpen. Billy gets back from a client meeting. He passes one black D&D employee under five, but at least we learn the guy's name is Gilbert. He asks how he is. Gilbert gets to say he's just great. Congratulations. Way to get on screen. way to show that diversity of D&D. Good Lord. Too bad Billy can't say the same, because here comes Baldo and the lady to arrest Billy as Amanda apologizes, but also doesn't say she will call a lawyer for him or anything, which we know she has done before for other tenants, including ones she has not fucked. And when we see Billy next, he is at the cop shop ranting about his rights. And then he sees Sam is also there, cuffed to a railing. Oh, no.
But you only need one hand to make your hair giant.
True.
It's very big.
It sure is. And that's where we leave them for now. Our A plot. Amanda and Kyle and Peter and Taylor get all snarled up with each other again, and also Sydney and Craig are involved. Taylor is seething at home when Peter and his frosty pink lipstick, which you can see in the visual aids, come down to demand his breakfast. When he nags her about why she also isn't dressed, she snaps that she's sick of being someone she's not. But those are the rules, he says. She dares him to spank her if she doesn't play nice, which that's a whole other kink. I guess you might as well try to redirect him. But a spanking is the least of Taylor's problems. If she's not going to be Beth, she can find somewhere else to live. So, yes, she will make him breakfast after all, but she's going to glare at him real hard as he leaves the room. Then Amanda calls Kyle to say she wants to put together a simple contract before they move forward on the jazz club. Kyle thinks the idea presupposes failure, and she's basically like, tough shit. And he's like, if you don't trust me, I'll have to think about this real hard. And as soon as she's hung up the phone, Craig enters and Amanda confronts him with a bill from her PI for the camera that Craig ruined when he pushed the guy in the pool. Now Craig's angle is convincing Amanda that Sydney's actually seriously hurt, and if anyone is being shady, it's Amanda for spying on her. And Amanda figures out that Craig likes Sydney and that he needs to keep away from her before he makes things worse. Seems like she should have said this when she declared his plan, when he declared his plan to seduce Sydney two episodes ago, but sure. Mm-hmm. You can try and change it now. And then Taylor's back in her Beth drag at Shooters when Michael meets her at the bar and she recounts the breakfast scene. She thought Peter was going to hit her, and Michael is like, but he didn't, right? As though Peter making his partner fear he might is not also abusive. But generally, Michael is empathetic and calls Peter a sick puppy. And Taylor is also empathetic to a fault. Clipped in.
I think he's trying to find something from his past, you know, like a happier time. So I don't know why I'm telling you all this, except I think you're the only other person who cares about him.
Yeah, but even Peter and I have been locking horns lately. Ever since he became chief of staff, that is.
Success has somehow made him cruel.
Or gone to his head is more like it. Yeah, he was a lot nicer when he was a loser. I mean, to everybody. All right. All right, I'll tell you what. Just go along with them for now. I'll try to feel out the situation, talk to Peter, get into his head, and then we'll take it from there.
Thanks. You know, I have to say, just talking to you about this has made me feel so much better.
What can I say? I'm here for you.
With no ulterior motive at all. Why would Michael have one?
And also, we've been locking horns lately. You guys have never liked each other.
No. Also, success has made him cruel. I mean, I guess that's true because he was also chief of staff the time that he, you know, tried to kill someone.
Mm-hmm.
Which Michael totally witnessed.
Hashtag never forget.
Nope. On rounds the next day, Michael meets a patient who got in a bar fight, or so the guy has been told. He doesn't remember anything, and the story's completely out of character for him because he's a minister. The older charged nurse who has had enough of everyone's shit, we've seen her in previous episodes, brings in the guy's EEG, and then Michael ushers all the interns to the hall to say the patient doesn't remember anything because he has temporal lobe epilepsy, aka rage epilepsy, and he was having a seizure. And I looked it up. This is real, but it is extremely rare. Of course, as we know, no medical condition is too rare for a soap opera writer to use. But anyway, clip 11.
So does this mean that he was or wasn't in control of what he was doing?
You tell me. Let's take our patient, an ordinary man, well-respected, admired even. But during a seizure, all the filters that keep his social controls in check, well, they disappear. Anger that's been suppressed leaks out, resulting in violence. Well, in a sense, his truer self emerges. Yeah, this is pretty serious stuff. You know, an illness like this could ruin a person's reputation entirely. And sadly, they'd never be the wiser.
Mm. He's so good. I mean, that pause, it's like just enough.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, good times.
It's great. And you can see his hatching a plan face in the visual aids, because that's what he's doing. Over to D&D, where Kyle sneaks up on Amanda. He has gotten over himself since they last spoke and presents her with an informal contract. Clip 12.
I am only willing to do this if nobody else can muscle in further down the road.
Well, who would you be thinking of?
Well, since you're still married to good old Dr. Burns, state community property law could put me into business with him, and that's not something I'm too keen on.
Don't be ridiculous. He'd never be interested in a venture like this. Besides, we're in divorce proceedings as we speak.
In other words, he's dragging his feet. No, it's no go until that lying, cheating husband of yours is out of the picture.
Well, what about your lying, cheating wife? Shouldn't she be out of the picture, too?
Taylor's many things, but she is not the money grubber that Burns is.
Oh, no, of course not. She just wouldn't give you your restaurant back. You know, if anyone needs to worry about being encroached upon here, it's me, by that psycho husband-stealing wife of yours.
Fine. So we both get divorced. ASAP.
Well, that'll be a cinch. And how do you propose we do that, Einstein?
We get them each to sign a waiver of appearance, finalize it in the Dominican Republic. That's what my sous chef Mario did.
Mario!
It was over in 2 days.
And you think they'll sign just because we asked them to?
They're a couple, aren't they? We'll get them in the same room. How are they going to say no without hurting each other's feelings? I say it's time we sit down, break bread, and break up.
Okay, first of all, shout out Mario.
Yep.
Fucking love that guy.
Hashtag even, free Mario.
Even when he's not on screen, he's doing great work. Second, the idea that Peter and Taylor would be worried about hurting each other's feelings. Like, I know you haven't had a lot of scenes with them lately, Kyle, but pay attention a bit. So then we're in some kind of public square where Craig is meeting Sydney, the latter almost immediately saying both that she's feeling better and that her attorney would not want her to tell Craig that. But he replies that Amanda just threatened to fire him if he spoke to Sydney again and tells her all about the insurance issue and how if Sydney's suit is successful, the company will fold. Amanda has other assets, but Craig doesn't and he'll be fucked. And Sydney wishes it were just Amanda taking the fall, as it were. So maybe she'll just talk to Harry and get him to come down on the damages. Craig can't believe that Sydney would do that for him. And they decide to hang out some more. And when they move, we see they're in front of this, like, water feature. I was like, where have I seen this before? Oh, that's right. Dave England and Danger Aaron kayaked on it in the Jackass TV show. And we will link it in the show notes. Sarah, if you want to watch it, I promise no one barfs. I promise. Just kayaking.
Okay. No yakking, just kayaking. Got it.
Very good. When we see Craig the next day, he's in Amanda's office, smugly telling her how he fixed everything, but also adding that Sydney's been misunderstood by most people, particularly Amanda, and Amanda doesn't believe it and doesn't really care. Speaking of Sydney, let's go over to her apartment where Harry's admonishing her on not seeming too mobile, and she's like, about that, let's ask for less money. And everyone keeps calling it a settlement, which it's not. That's not what it is until you settle the lawsuit. Like,
right.
It's a demand, but whatever. Harry knows why and says Craig is manipulating Sydney to save himself money. And Sydney sighs that even if it's true, she couldn't live with herself if their bogus lawsuit is successful. So she's instructing Harry to drop the settlement to $50,000. And Harry refuses and says if she doesn't go along with him, he's going to sell her out to the cops. And when she's in jail, Craig is not going to visit. Probably true. Over to Kyle's, where apparently everyone's been sitting together for a while before Kyle finally says the reason he and Amanda dragged Peter and Taylor there is so they could all agree to finalize their divorces. And Peter's snitty that Kyle thinks Peter's marriage is any of his business. Kyle has paperwork they can sign before hopping down to the DR for quickie divorces. And Taylor immediately signs, crowing that it'll make it easier for her and Peter to get married. But Peter ignores her, accusing Amanda of sleeping with Kyle. Clip 13.
I mean, isn't that a little incestuous, even for you, Amanda?
Ow? How? How is that incestuous?
What? Yeah. Also, you're fucking your dead wife's sister? who's right. dressed as your dead wife. So yeah. shut the fuck up.
I mean, that also isn't incest, but it's closer to whatever Peter thinks Amanda is doing with Kyle, which, by the way, she's not. But please go to the visual aids to see Kyle's okay dude face at this, because it's pretty funny. Mm-hmm. Amanda states that nothing romantic is going on between her and Kyle, but Peter refuses to sign anyway. Clip 14.
Honey, I just signed. So should you.
I know I could count on your autograph, Taylor, considering how desperate you are to hang on to Dr. Burns here.
Shut up, Kyle.
I can't believe how sexually undiscerning, Amanda. I mean, first the Craig and now Kyle. I mean, you're losing ground. It's almost slutty.
Hey, that's a lady you're talking to.
Oh, that's funny. The male slut defending the female slut.
Better a slut than a conniving bitch.
Or worse, a conniving bitch in some ugly-ass clothes.
Well, talk about taste. Look at you. You go from a chief of staff to boffing a hash slinger.
Okay, you know what? Fine. Fine. We make love every night, all night, and it is great. Feel better? Or do you need to see it with your own eyes?
They kiss.
Obvious, isn't it? It's over between us, Peter. Sign the paper. Peter, sign it.
All right. Done.
You know, as far as I'm concerned, I've only been married once, and that was to Beth. Everything after that, a waste of time.
Ooh.
Yeah, really. Hear that, Taylor? Also, boffing a hash slinger? When are you, buddy?
At least they didn't have a Donnybrook. There's that.
23 skidoo.
Mm-hmm. After Peter has dropped his ring in the wine he, for some reason, had at this very unfriendly meeting, Taylor pensively plays with hers. Kyle looks at her expectantly, and clip 15.
Ah, forget it, Kyle. Selling mine.
I hate to like her because she's such a terrible person, but Lisa Rinna can really be funny sometimes.
Yeah, it's true.
When they're gone, Kyle says he's glad it's over, but Amanda surprised him with that kiss, and Amanda tells him not to read into it. If the busboy had been closer, she would have kissed him too. And that night, Peter and Taylor are at some hospital function, Peter pretending he's not still bothered by Amanda's seeming new love affair with Kyle. And Peter has just told Taylor to quit needling him and act like an adoring accessory when Michael shoves his way through the crowd toward them and is standing with Taylor when Peter is called up to give a speech about the hospital's 25th anniversary. Clip 16.
Look at him. On top of the world, isn't he?
Yep. Tonight, it's my pleasure to
all
talk
these people
about
think he's the world's greatest guy.
And just yeah. how much impact.
It wasn't always like that, was it?
That's right. When I first came to L.A., Peter was a broken man.
Yeah. It was the only time he was really nice to you, too.
What's your point?
Well, think about it. He only treated you well when he was down and out. And then when things started getting better for him, he started getting meaner and weirder. Am I right?
Yeah, so...
So, all we have to do is knock him down a couple of pegs.
And as the new chief of staff,
you mean bring him down to a manageable level of failure?
I promise to dedicate myself.
More like rock bottom. And I got a pretty good idea how to do that.
Dun dun dun. Also, he was never really that nice to Taylor, as I recall.
No. When he finally recognized her, he was like, anyhow. So, yeah, this is the writer's fault.
Mm-hmm.
Not his.
I mean, they're so tired. It's episode 29.
Yeah. Why is this still happening?
We've been talking about this season since February. Anyway, on that note, let's wrap it up by naming our episode MVP.
French fries.
Yeah, French fries are good.
Yeah, they are.
I'm going to say the adoption counselor, one of the few people in Allison's life who is giving her any consequences on anything.
Mm. Yeah. Okay.
Least valuable player. Jim? Like, just fucking get out of here.
Yeah. Please. Please. Anywhere but here. We're begging you.
Yep.
Next time on Again With This... Craig and Sydney team, Taylor and Michael scheme, Jim still won't leave, and Jake and Allison are about to say bye via oh hi. You may say bye to your lunch after looking at our visual aids, which you'll find for this and every other episode of Again With This at againwiththispodcast.com. You can also follow us on Twitter at AWT90210. You can join the Patreon fun at patreon.com/againwiththis. And you can call or text us at 210-920-4699. And please do so. We are looking for material for an upcoming episode, namely New Year's resolutions the Starverse character should make, and we need your input. Once again, 210-920-4699. Let us hear from you. I'm Lethal Ditch Sarah D. Bunting, and I'm on Twitter at Tomato Nation. My co-host is somehow probative bar menu, Tara Ariano, and she's on Twitter at Tara Ariano. And our producer is Symbolic Ring Toss, David T. Cole. Talk to you next time.
Ooh. What?